You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 26th, 2010. This is episode 133, Great Classroom Websites. We're back again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I am joined today by our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz from New London. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Martin, and what a beautiful day it is.
Isn't that awesome? There are just a few precious days, I'm sad to say, in Wisconsin that we can say, boy, we got perfect weather out.
And this is two in a row.
That is, yes, that's right. And where are we? We're stuck in, you know, inside on a podcast. So fortunately, our listeners can take their iPods and go outside. But
that's right.
Sally Draper is not with us. Her father passed away yesterday, and we want to certainly let Sally know, and I know she's aware of it, that our prayers and our thoughts are with her. Her father had an illness. Those of you that have listened to the podcast for a while have known that, you know, she was down there a month or so ago. And she got a chance to spend some time with her dad, and the Lord decided it was time that another saint would join him in heaven. And but that's just a celebration that we should all look forward to have that reunion, and then look forward to rejoining our loved ones as well. So we miss you, Sally, and safe travels, and we look forward to getting you back in the podcast rotation here. But the timing is good because, Gail, this is our regular show, and we're going to focus, as usual, on classroom technology. And the topic of the day is probably something very timely, I would think, from a teacher's perspective, as the school year is wrapped up and you're probably very close to the end of your school year, where you're thinking about, what are we going to do? What am I going to do this summer? Not that there's any shortage of things, but one of those things, I think, in growing numbers for many teachers is a classroom website.
Right. And summer for a teacher is the time not only to vacation and rest up a little, but this is a time when you're able to get a lot of your long-range planning and changing and redoing done. And your website certainly should be included in that list all year long. You've probably noted some things that could be improved, and now's your chance to sit down with some time and do some maybe redesigning of the look, but also the components and what you want to accomplish through that website.
Now it seems that this is kind of an opportune time as we're seeing that, you know, most churches, most schools would have a website, and they use that for promotional and communication purposes. But it's kind of a natural fit for a classroom, a teacher, to have a website, because there are probably three areas, I would think, that would be areas of focus. One, obviously, that comes to mind immediately would be for the kids, that they have a resource. And I've seen some nicely done websites that teachers obviously post the assignments. They post project resources. They'll post general resources, what sites they can use for research, those kinds of things. Do you provide some guidance to your staff there, Gail, about how that might best work?
Sure, and in the summer, most of that, you know, during the school year, that's teacher-driven, that type of content material. But in the summer, it's actually more parent-driven.
Right, this time, another audience, right.
Yep, this time of year, we get a lot of parents saying, hey, what can kids be looking at that's some good stuff for summer?
Yeah.
Maybe they need some help in math. Maybe they need help in reading. Maybe they just want to play some educational games. So, you know, you always provide a page in the summer. I generally try to find some new links to the same old general things that the kids are learning, but they don't realize what they're learning because it's new.
Right, absolutely, yeah. And then during the school year, that's that classroom website is hopefully something that parents would get very used to going to find out, know, what's right. going on, assignments, just general policies, you know, classroom right. policies, keeping up to date on the kids' work even, right?
Right. And Chris, in the interview, I know I was going to address all three of those. It's the classroom website, really, the three key areas as I see it are, and I try to bring that across to my staff, is, okay, you're communicating with your students, obviously, and that's a back and forth through the website many times. And then parents also, you know, parental things that can be put there for their convenience. And then finally, you have the sense of global communication where you're out there in the world and you're making some attempts there. I know Chris, the interviewee today, she does some projects where they collect data globally and compare, I think it's bugs and ponds throughout uh-huh. the world and cool. that type of thing. So you've got a lot of different audiences that you reach through that website. So it's got a lot of potential. It's a powerful thing.
Sure. The school shopper is going to probably pay very close attention. If they have a third grader coming up, they're going yep. to visit the third grade classroom site to see, hey, what's going on there? What can my third grader expect to experience in the right. upcoming school year? What's the teacher like? What's the, right. you know, what's the activity level? You know, what are some of the resources? So, I think that's really important. Probably teachers don't, you know, track to that always because they're really right. busy in the educational process, but that whole promotional side I think is real important to consider.
Very much so. We've had I have one family that comes to mind that just came out and told me they moved here from Ohio and they wanted Christian education. They weren't Lutheran, mm-hmm. but they looked at whatever Christian was available in the area, and that is what helped them make the decision, is what they saw on the website. So yeah. Teachers are more focused on, you know, inward towards the school and the immediate needs. But, yeah, in the years to come, we all have to be more in tune with the fact that if we want our Lutheran schools to continue, we have to be more outreach-minded and draw people in. And not that we have to do anything different than we're doing, but we just have to showcase it.
Right. Yep. So I'm assuming that interested teachers to see how this might work could go to your school's website and see some good examples of this, right, Gail?
I did have Chris's website connected.
Put that in the show notes, too.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Very good. And just a little, time for a little plug. One thing that we noticed when we were doing our training, those schools that used Final Web product, the Synod's web hosting partner, we ran a 3-day Final Web for Dummies, but we got a lot of feedback from teachers who couldn't attend that. I know, Gail, you attended one day, but most teachers couldn't get away for any significant amount of time right. during the school year. So what we're doing now in July 19th, we have a whole day dedicated just to teachers, just to creating these classroom websites. So it's really focused. We'll really be talking about how to use the tools that are available in Final Web to set up a classroom website. So you'll finish the day with some good stuff. And then the following 3 days, July 20 to 22, if you want to get a little bit more in-depth on a lot of the inner workings of Final Web, that is available too. We're offering that in two locations, in Milwaukee here at the Synod Administration Building, and also in New Ulm at Martin Luther College. So if you go to bit.ly/FW4Teachers, that's the number 4, you can find out how to get signed up. Cost is $49 and probably worthwhile endeavor, especially if you're thinking about using this summer to kind of ramp up your classroom page, which is definitely something that I think is worthwhile in thinking about. Gail, you wanted to mention a big event coming up on Memorial Day.
Right. Before I do that, I wanted to just add to the plug for the Final Web for Teachers.
Sure.
I think that was an excellent idea to have, and anybody who has any technology coordinators or people in charge of technology for their teachers, everybody's at a different level with what they do with their class websites. You train everybody, and you have some that succeed greatly and some that are dragging their feet, and some that really want to do better, but they just don't know. There's so many different levels, and so even though you help train these people within your own school, this is, $49. Just take a drive to Milwaukee. There's good snacks. I remember I ate all day long.
Yes, there are.
I ate all day long during that meeting. And You know, I'm going to approach a couple of my teachers with the on the angle of, you know, we've talked about this, but now, you know, this might be a good time to go and listen to somebody else talk about it, talk to some other people. And
yeah, there's great networking opportunities there, because people are coming at this from with all kinds of different ideas that they're bringing to the table. It was really fun to teach the last one.
So send those teachers out there. I think it's great.
We do have limited seating. I think we can only seat 20 here, and we've already got 7 or 8 signed up. So
I better get on.
Do not wait.
Get on my two guys.
Or you'll be
soon
you'll be driving out to New Ulm.
Yeah. I don't know about that. The thing I just wanted to mention, we were talking about websites and classroom websites, and I was able to do a special project with the 8th grade this year that is a website. It'll be in the show notes, the link to it. It's called We Remember. And you see a lot of this going on now because this is the 35th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. And New London just happens to be, at the time they had 5,300 people living in town, and they lost 13 young men in that war, which is a very high percentage. Rumor has it the highest percentage in the state, but I couldn't find any documentation to say that other than counting them up myself. But that's what's always been told me since I moved here. So we have a monument to those 12 people. Well, actually, it should be 13, out on the in a park at our in our city. And so we went out there in September and we took some pictures and we did some primary research. So this is a good plug for the beauty of a project in a classroom that does all primary resource collecting. We talked to people that knew these families, some families, some friends. And I'm not a native here, so that was hard for me to make some connections, but I ran into a lady who was just a gem. And she even had the original copies of the newspapers from all those stories.
What a great resource, huh?
I know. So, and she came in and talked, and we've had several other people. Four of those people happened to be in the same confirmation class at our Lutheran school. And so we had quite some neat connections. So what actually we did through the years, we worked on putting together, each of the kids took a person, and they were able to create a tribute podcast. So we created a website. There's podcasts about each of these people and a link to a really nice thing done by the Boston Globe on a slideshow, pictorial slideshow of the Vietnam War era. And it was fun to have Judy come in and just educate the kids on what it was like to live in New London during those days. I mean, people were getting drafted then, of course, different than now. But the kids today, even though they're living in the time of various conflicts, the whole idea of the draft and a little city just losing people right and left and who's going to be next and, you know, the whole draft. They even were, went as far as putting together information to go to the authorities and say, please don't draft any more people from this city. We've given up enough.
Right.
And I don't know how far that got, but there was a movement. So really interesting stuff. It's not done yet. I made it public. We're going to unveil it, hopefully, on Memorial Day with a little ceremony. But I hooked it up so that you guys at the podcast could take a look at it. We're still editing, and some aren't even up there yet. But
so by the time our listeners are listening to this, it may be up. I mean, we will. Yeah. This is going to be released on May 26th, even though we're pre-recording by a week here. But it's coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. The days are getting short, and everybody else is like counting the days till school's over, and I'm like, oh, no, I need more time.
Yeah, that's right. You're about the only one, Gail, I think.
I am the odd man out here, yes. I added to the show notes just because we're talking about classroom websites, and even though this isn't a classroom website, we're putting it out there. We used iGoogle to produce it, which had a lot of limitations, so I was a little bit, but we were into it too far, and we stuck with it. But,
okay. Interesting.
Take a look at that, and I want to motivate you to try to get teachers interested in the whole primary resource, local community primary resource stuff. It isn't real easy to do, but it's definitely worth the effort, and very, very significant for the kids. I'm sure they will not forget that they've done this, and we hope that the community doesn't either. So one of these people that we have a name that isn't on the memorial that people feel that should be, because even though his parents lived in Winnicott, he went to New London High School. So we're actually going to go to the city council and try to get another name put on this monument that we think should be there with the rest. So it's turning into a lot of interesting teaching opportunities.
Very good, good. And we'll have the link to that in the show notes. So I'm just looking that up now. Very nice, very nice. You had a chance to sit down with one of your teachers, Chris Ladwick. She's fourth grade, right?
Yep.
And what made you pick her as a candidate for an interview on classroom websites?
Well, you'll hear in the interview that she's taught for 28 years, and she's had at least one computer in her class for 27 of those years.
She is she is a technology enthusiast. She's not afraid of it, apparently.
No, she's not afraid of it, and she is very open to being taught about it.
That's great.
She grabbed onto this, and I usually try to get at least one person in each of the departments that becomes a real a user of technology, and then that can help the whole department, you know. And she's a shining example in our school.
Okay, great. So let's listen to Gail interview her faculty mate, Chris Ladwick.
Hello, here we are today talking with Chris Ladwick, who is a fourth grade teacher at Emmanuel Lutheran School in New London, Wisconsin. And the purpose of our visit with Chris today is to pick her brain a little bit on a subject about which we know quite a bit, but there's always more to learn. Classroom websites. What should you put on a classroom website? So before we start that discussion today, let's have Chris tell us a little bit about herself and her role here at Emmanuel. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Gail. I have been a teacher for 28 years. I've taught either third and or fourth grade all of those years. And for 27 of those years, I've had a computer or computers in my classroom.
Okay. And are you responsible for basically the whole day worth of subjects? And do you use your computer, would you say, in most subject areas throughout the day?
I teach every class except for music and Phi Ed, but I use the computer all day long. Between myself and my students, we work on projects throughout the day. I use my smart board for math classes and art classes. We are always using the computer for something in our room.
All right, so you have become a good technology integrator across the curriculum. And since you've been so successful at doing that, did that come before the classroom website, or did the classroom website come first?
The classroom website was part of what I wanted to communicate with the parents, because I had been working with computers for so long. I wanted the parents to know some of what we have been doing in class.
So it was really parental communication goals that motivated you to get your first website.
Yes, it was.
And tell us a little bit about the first try.
My first try at communication through my web page wasn't very successful, because many of the parents didn't have computers or they wouldn't look at the website. But I kept at it. I started by putting my assignments on the website, and as I got parents and the children excited about that, then the parents became excited, and then they started to go to the website also.
And what type of website did you start with? What was your delivery system for your website in the beginning?
My first website was a commercial site called TeacherWeb. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a very simple site to use. The parents found it very easy to use. I had on my classroom assignments. Later on, by a mom's request, I added spelling words, but it was a very simple site to use, and I really enjoyed it when I first used it.
So about how many years ago was it that you tried to first initiate this?
My first website was probably 10 years ago.
Okay, so you've been in this quite a while. Even before your technology coordinator was breathing down your neck and asking you constantly to create a website. So Chris really was a leader in our school at doing this type of thing. And since that time, we've gravitated over to the final web website, and she's been working on a final website for the last 4 years or so.
Or so, yes.
Okay. And I'm looking at her website right now, very colorful website on her page, and I can see she still has student assignments listed. She's appealing to the parents with parental notes and information for them. Some spiritual encouragement on the first page. A lot of interesting things. So she's worked on things for students, things for parents. And just how do you go about, Chris, deciding what types of things? That's kind of our goal today. How do you know what belongs on a good classroom web page?
Well, the communication needs to be easy for the parents and the children to read. I think like an opening page, for me, it works to have announcements on that first page so the parents don't have to go very far to see things. To have a very clear, easy menu so that they can go from place to place. It has become a place where I can put PDF copies for parents to download things that their children have forgotten to take home or can't find. And it's a place where I can show off some of my kids' work, that either vocal or written work that I can type up or take pictures of, so that the parents can see that also.
Okay. And I think you've hit upon a very important thing. We try to make things as available with as few clicks as possible so that people can get in, get out, and go on with their busy work. What would you say? I noticed that you mentioned student work. So you showcase some of your student work online. What does that do for your students? How do they feel about that?
They love to have their pictures on the web page with things, you know, their pictures, their art things that they have created. When we do vocal things, they absolutely love to hear their voices, and then of course they laugh because their voices sound funny. And I know that they go home and show it to their parents.
Right. I think that's a real powerful thing about having kids' things on the web, is that parents do get to see those things at home. I notice another thing that you have on here, Chris, is you have quite a large section called your student projects page. Can you tell us a little bit? That looks different than showcasing the work. Can you tell us about the project page section?
The project page has been set up with links that I have found through the years that relate to specific projects that we do in class. So we come to the computer lab and the children go to our classroom website. I tell them which the projects page, or sometimes I have another page on there that has safe links on for the children to go to, and they can get their information as they're doing their research for their web quests or whatever project we happen to be working on. And then because those links are all on my site, they can go home and they can also get information from home by our website.
Excellent. There's nothing more frustrating than taking a class full of kids to the lab and having them type in a URL to try to find a spot that you want them to look at.
That does not work.
Right. So actually you are using your website here for a content delivery system, in a manner of speaking, too. This is a place your students know they can come and find the content they need to do the assignments that you have posted here for them. I imagine that comes in handy too with absences.
Yes, it does. They can go to their city library computers or at home, and yes, they look things up, and sometimes the things they find in class, they're done with their homework. They just want to show their parents the cool websites that we have, that I've found for them to use.
Well, I guess I'd like to ask you, if you think about all you've done with technology and you've incorporated a lot of things in this website, very nicely done, if you had to think about and share with us one thing that's really improved in your classroom because of your use of your classroom website, what do you think is the biggest improvement you could point to, or the biggest positive that comes from using a classroom website?
Lots of things. One that is handy for me is that dealing with the assignment page, I don't have parents who call me at night and say, what is my child supposed to be doing? The assignments are there, they can look them up. But the positive thing for the kids, I think, is having all the links available. links that we use in the classroom, math sites, things that will enrich them so they'll be doing some good things on the internet.
Because I teach in the same school with Chris, I can say that I've been in her classroom many times, and she has 5 classroom computers for the kids in the back of her room. They're always on, they're always busy, somebody's always working on something. She does a real good job of integrating the computer itself into the classroom and using the time well. Kids are doing various things on there at various times of the day so that by the end of the day, everybody's had a turn to get done what needs to be done. Chris, what if I would say to you, how would education, your technology integration, and your classroom instruction change in your room if I was to say that next year your class is going to be given a laptop computer for every student in your classroom?
I would love that. One, I think they would become more independent. They wouldn't be running back to the computers and they wouldn't have to share. Of course, learning to share is a good thing, but I think they could be trained and monitored to finish their homework that they need to before they go to the computers. It would make my life easier as when we do research, because everything would be in front of them. They wouldn't have to wait their turn. They could still share the fun things that they find with each other, but I think that would be fun.
You could get a lot more done, I think.
If they were properly trained, and I would certainly have to monitor them to make sure that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. But yes, we would get a lot more done.
Right, and that's really what we're becoming as facilitators of learning. And certainly one-to-one computing would take that. Yes, you're correct, I agree. Well, you do have a nice website here, and I think that it serves a very good purpose, multiple purposes, some for parents, some for students, and even for the outside world as your kids get excited about sharing the things they've written for actually the whole world, whoever stumbles upon the site and can read what they've written. I know from experience, too, that sometimes you've done global projects where the kids have shared data with kids from all around the world and posted results. So I know that your website truly is global in nature too, and I think that is that's very commendable. I think it's one of the things a website can do for a classroom is to bring this idea of the global classroom into perspective for the kids. Is there any one tool or concept that you could say is invaluable to your being to make, you know, making this website look like what you want it to look like and work like what you want it to look like? Have you found any tool that really you couldn't live without in order to accomplish that?
I don't know about a tool necessarily, but a concept that the website itself needs to be easy for the teacher to manipulate, or if I have my students put things on the website, it has to be easy to manipulate when you're adding or changing information. And it also needs to be easily navigated by parents, so that they don't have to jump through too many hoops to get to the places that they want to be on the website.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your insights today, Chris. It was my pleasure talking with you today, and I very much enjoyed it, and I've all very much enjoyed watching you develop your website and see how much it has enhanced the education that goes on in your classroom. Thanks again for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Again, our thanks, Gail, for taking charge with that interview. Nicely done. It's Chris. One thing that struck me was her kind of enthusiasm to try new things and to figure out how to really integrate technology, not because it's technology, but because there's a really a learning objective.
Right. She's just a person that sees the value. She can be easily motivated because she sees the value for her students. Mm-hmm. She really cares about what she does for her kids.
Right. Very good. Good. Thanks, Chris, for joining us for the interview. News in tech. One thing that I wanted to share is that Wells now has a Facebook page. Were you aware of that, Gail? An official Facebook page?
I think I did look at it. We also have a Facebook page now, so I was looking at all the kind of Wells Connected Facebook pages one
right.
night. So.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there, but finally we launched our own official one. It is at facebook.com/WellsLutherans. And I'm just going to go there now, see how many likes, what they call likes now, or you know they used to be fans. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm
right.
real happy with that change. In
well, yeah, likes, you can do a like even though you're not a fan, right?
I don't know. I think if you go to the site and you click the like button, I believe that makes you a fan.
Oh, okay.
But I could be wrong. I am not. I'd be the first to admit that I don't get Facebook. I mean, I use it, but I don't really get it.
It's really kind of complicated, yeah. I think. There's a lot to it when you really get into it and how you, if you want to try to connect and use groups with your... I'm trying to figure out if you can use groups with a fan page, and I haven't found a way to do that.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, what I like about, the effort so far is all that we're doing is pumping in mostly our RSS feed. So you basically, if you want to keep up to date on the things that Daily Devotion, recent Q&A articles, Together News articles, those kinds of things are all on here. But we really haven't even advertised this yet. We haven't even mentioned it on this show, I don't think. And we have over 3,000 people that are on the list, whatever, like list, the fan list, whatever it is that we call it there. Which is great. That's astounding. That's kind of surprising to me. And I think we're still trying to figure out how we're going to use it. I think we needed a presence to have a kind of a landing page for people interested about Wells or Wells members who wanted to comment. And that's been a nice thing, too, that we have now an instant feedback mechanism on all the materials we post, whether it be devotions or Q&A topics or those kinds of things. So Facebook is really good at that, so that you can chat back and forth related to that. But I think we'll use this in other ways, too. We just haven't figured out all the ways yet.
Right, and that's a challenge, I think, in being the webmaster and the Facebook master, so to speak. I put like sermon content on both, although I have to edit the sermons because we don't have too many 20-minute or less sermons, and you can only do 20 minutes on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, but...
pastors have got to love these time limitations. So,
yeah,
pastor, if you want to be on YouTube, you got to be 10 minutes or less on your sermon. I'm sorry. Facebook is a little bit more liberal.
Facebook is 20. We can do that.
Yeah.
But, and the thing is that when you talk about websites now, that's since we're talking about that today, that is the thing. Right now, we're living in both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that eventually the old Facebook thing is going to fade in the background, and the social-built networks, of course, are going to be – because people go there and they're connected with their different connections through there, and they go to one place and all the feed comes in there. And so there's going to be a lot of decisions you're going to be making about where you're putting stuff and what to use. That's for sure.
But so for now, Wells is on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WellsLutherans if you want to like it or join it or whatever the terminology is today.
Right.
It may change by the time we release this podcast for all we know. So
that's right.
That's kind of the way Facebook rolls.
My eighth grade teacher is actually, we talked yesterday about he's thinking about, we have a lot of kids that are on Facebook, and they're, Facebook really says 13 and over for an age, but we have, eighth graders are 13, but so many of them are on it anyway. He was thinking, maybe we should do our own eighth grade Facebook page, and then at least we're on it with the kids, and so it's a little bit of, sometimes they chat about things more freely there than they do in class and whatnot, but...
Yeah.
I don't know if I want another page to monitor. I think I might give that one to him.
You already don't have enough days in the school, in the school year, Gail.
That's right.
Why shorten it even more? Let's move on to picks of the week. Gail, you have a pick this week?
I do, but before we get there, I don't know what our time's looking like. We were going to talk about some of the webby things.
Sorry, I skipped that. Go ahead. Fire away with that.
If we have time, otherwise we can put that
No,
on a different.
yeah, we have all the, you know, we have all the time in the world. You know, we'll just chat away. They'll turn us off, but we can keep talking.
We can keep going. All right, good. Well, it probably won't take too long because it was Sally's idea to take a look at the Webby Awards for things were just given out, and websites are no exception from that. And so she looked in the educational area. There were four we had highlighted, and then we kind of brought it down to two of them, which was We Choose the Moon and Simple Machines. And Sally was going to do Simple Machines. That comes out of actually the Chicago Museum of
Science and Industry.
That's very good. But I don't know as much about that one, so I'm going to talk about it.
Well, we'll save that for her when she comes back. So yeah. Why don't you just do We Choose the Moon?
We Choose the Moon is like so right up my alley. I was so excited because I just happen to live in the time frame. I mean, I was in grade school when we got to go to the one room in the school that had a TV, and we all got to sit in there and watch Alan Shepard just go up and come down, first guy out of, and then a couple years later we got to go in another room, still just one TV, and watch John Glenn, and I was so impressed. I mean, I was enthralled with the space program. I actually John Glenn, and he sent me a personal, not a stamp, but a really personalized picture that I still have.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Kind of lost respect for him later in his career. Yeah. That's another story.
Right.
I was thrilled. My dad, I guess, got me going. He would stay home from work the day those launches took place, and we would watch because he, too, just. So I've watched them all. We hauled our TV, which was not a little tiny portable TV in those days, to our campsite on July 20th, 1969 to watch the moon landing. It was at Bear Lake right outside of New London, which is kind of ironic. But anyway, so I am enthralled in this. For me, this was right up my alley. And I think for anybody who lives through this time or is interested in the whole space program, this is just like you're reliving your past.
Yep. 40th anniversary, yeah.
Yep, it's celebrating the 40th anniversary. And what it is actually the beauty of it is it's going to happen in real time. So on 9:32 a.m. on June 16th, the Saturn V is going to launch from the website, and everything on this site is going to correspond exactly to the times and the dates of the original mission.
Yep.
So it's going to be like doing it all over again. And now there's a Facebook widget, although I tried to download that and it didn't work. They said they were working on it. There are some Twitter feeds. You can sign up for a Twitter feed from a command person in Houston, one in the LEM, one in the command module. So you can get Twitter feeds from these people. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think they're taking authentic stuff and just putting it into that mode for this day and age, because all of the audio recordings and everything on here is authentic. It's none of it is just made up. It's the real tapes and the real sound, and it very, very impressive. So you can do all kinds of things. And then what's neat about it, if you do this with the kids, I used to connect. I did a big thing in seventh grade when we studied Russia, because we studied the Cold War. It's about one sentence in the textbook, but I just made it into a bigger thing, because you could talk about the space program forever with that.
Right.
You know, but so you can follow the astronauts. You can go to there's every stage. There's the
11 stages. Yeah.
Yep. And they all have original photos, videos, sound recordings. Then there's a link also to the whole Kennedy Memorial Library, which has all of this. And of course, even the title, "We Choose the Moon," is from the Kennedy speech.
Right.
Which promoted and motivated everybody to spend this money and make this effort in order to get to the moon first, you know.
Very cool site. Definitely worth it.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's too bad that it was July 20th, because most people won't be having school then,
right?
You know. But it's useful without being on that date. I mean, I went through the whole thing just right now, too, and it plays through the whole thing.
Right.
But it would just be more exciting to the real-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it is up and running. Like, some of the things don't work yet, but they
right,
will.
Right, because they're rolling them out kind of in those stages, yeah.
But very eye-appealing, and, you know, the content.
Very engaging,
Yeah. interactive, very deserving of combining the history of the past with the technology of the present.
Right. Very good. We Choose the Moon. Webby Award, the Webby Award winner this year.
Yep.
Now let's go to picks.
Okay. You go first, Martin.
Oh, this will be a first. thank you. My pick is many of us are used to using iTunes, especially if we have iPods or some kind of MP3 player. And it's kind of a, for me, it's a love-hate relationship with iTunes. You know, some things it does very well, sometimes not so well. I work mostly on a Windows machine, and iTunes on Windows gets really sluggish. And another thing about iTunes is if it's your music manager, but you don't have an iPod, if you've got some other kind of MP3 player or smartphone, whether it's Windows Mobile or Android now, iTunes doesn't do well with those kinds of devices. So you need another solution, and one that is free and is really gaining popularity is a product called Double Twist. It syncs, it basically is an iTunes replacement. It doesn't have all the features, bells and whistles, but it what it does is makes it really simple to integrate or sync information back and forth between any kind of device, any kind of MP3 player, PSP, smartphone, really any electronic device that you can hook up to your computer, even a camera, where you can transfer content back and forth, whether that be pictures, music, podcasts, videos. One nice thing it does is it actually converts your video or your audio to the right format for the device. So you really don't have to worry about what format you've got that audio or video content in. It will sense what device, what kind of players that device has. So if it's an Android smartphone, for instance, it will do that conversion on the fly and plug it into your phone. So it'll do automatic syncing. It's connected with Amazon MP3, so you can buy songs just like you can on the iTunes store, songs or videos. It'll import even playlists from iTunes. So if you've built up some playlists, it'll query that. It'll look in your iTunes library if you want to maintain it that way and suck that into Double Twist. It really syncs almost anything. It has a podcast search and subscription service, and all for the price of $0. So it's definitely a worthy iTunes replacement. They're making improvements all the time. So it's really kind of the standard now, I think, for any non-iTunes friendly devices. That's Double Twist.
Good pick. I just had somebody yesterday complaining to me about how they use the Windows side of things, and then whenever they use iTunes for something else, iTunes automatically starts taking all their songs out of that player list and putting them in iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
again, it's
a
love-hate relationship.
Yeah.
So.
They weren't happy about that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm not always happy about iTunes either, and I'm.
Mac, yeah.
I'm a thoroughly Mac user, mm-hmm. and it does not do well with syncing with iPods. It's got a lot of issues. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Double Twist is an alternative.
All right.
What's your pick, Gail?
My pick of the week is kind of something we've talked about many times before. It's Deagle, but it's a specialized
part
of
Deagle. I love Deagle. I use Deagle all the time.
Right. And I used Delicious for when I first started social bookmarking. I used Delicious because that was kind of the thing
out
there.
It was the only game in town.
Yeah, and I used that for about 2 weeks. That's how late I got into it. And then switched over right away to Deagle, and I've been a Deagle user ever since and like it a lot.
Seems like Deagle has a lot of traction with the educational space, with teachers in particular.
Yes, they do. And actually, the lady that does Deagle, one of the is going to be presenting at our conference this summer, so I'm anxious to talk with her. They're coming out with some new stuff. They got a brand new version 5 thing they're coming out with that they're excited about, so we'll see what that is. But what I wanted to talk about today was if you're a teacher or anybody in any high school classroom, even if you teach online, you could be an online teacher, face-to-face teacher, upper grade school teacher, maybe even middle grades if you got a lot going in your school. There's a feature, and we all know that you could share groups in Deagle, but you can actually share what they call classroom groups. So if you go to Deagle, there is an option called the teacher console. And once you go into that teacher console, you have the opportunity to set up classroom groups. So therefore, you could have within your classroom, like say you're doing a project and you have six groups and they all have four people in them, you could create six groups, and then each of these groups would have that space to collect their links that they found that they can collaborate on as they're working on this project. You can not only just create the groups, and of course the groups can cross-connect with each other, but you can also create topics. So like the teacher could throw a topic in there, and kids would throw up websites that would fit that topic for research.
Right.
So it's a very handy way to organize research from the web for kids when they're working in groups.
Mm-hmm. I would assume each student then needs a Deagle account, and then the teacher can manage who can see what?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Now let me think how this works. Well, they need an account. Yes.
Right.
But they do not need an email address, because the teacher has an email address.
Okay.
So this is one of those things that you can do. They do not need an individual student address, email address. So even if your kids don't have email, that's not a problem.
Okay. But they do need to identify themselves some way so that it's tagged,
right,
with their stuff.
Right.
Okay. Cool.
Right.
And free, which is good. And I think a really well done service. I think it's easy to find stuff, to sort, to categorize, and I think they've done a nice, even a better job than Delicious has done, especially when you're for research topics like this. Or we use it for the Wells Tech group at this point too. There's a Wells Tech group in Deagle that I just tag it, and anybody in the group automatically gets notified, you know, that there's something new, and that's been helpful for me and Sally to work with.
Yeah, I should be doing that too when I throw stuff up there. I use the list method in my library. I go by lists more than tags.
Okay.
I guess just old fashioned.
Yep. There's a couple ways to do it in Deagle.
Right.
Okay. All right. Because we're pre-recording this, and we're recording this the week of the 19th, which we just released a podcast today, because I'm going to be out of town next week, and so we don't have a lot of feedback from the previous episode because it was just released this morning. But we did have a conversation that was initiated on our listserv that I wanted to call everybody's attention to. And Leah Doze from St. Mark's Watertown, a teacher there, had a question about library software. Apparently she's in charge of, you know, setting that up there or maintaining that, and they're looking for ideas from other Wells Tech listeners or from the Wells Tech listserv folks about potential programs that could be used to basically manage the library. So, and that's a pretty complicated thing, or can be a complicated thing. You've got barcodes, you have late fees, you have all kinds of stuff, and there's standards even out there as well. And she already got one response from Mike Plucker from St. Paul's in New Ulm, Minnesota, about what they're using. They use something called LibrarySoft, which is a paid-for package, and it seems like it has a lot of features there as well. And I'm sure there's many others on the market. So if anybody's interested in joining that conversation, if you've got some good success stories with the library software that you use that you want to share with Leah, I'm sure she would appreciate hearing about that. So if you want to check out the listserv, you can go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, and there's a link to it in the right-hand column there, and you can kind of see the latest discussions going on there as well.
Yeah, and what I liked about Michael's suggestion there, I read that, and he had some ways, as he often does, to work around the huge expense of the bigger companies.
Very resourceful, yes.
Right, try to make it a little bit more doable for our situation.
Yep. There is a church librarians organization out there, too. Now that I mention it, that would probably be a good group to talk to. And I don't remember what their website address is now. We'll find that and put that in the show notes. But that's there's a listserv just for church librarians. It's fairly active. That would be a great resource as well, Leah, to take a look at. All right, next week, we hope to, and this is kind of tentative yet, but we hope to have a conversation with Stephen Stelter, who is a graphic designer and has done a number of church logos. So we'd hope to talk to him and kind of devote a show to the development of identity and the brand of the church and what technologies are at our disposal to help us do that. So tune in next week for a conversation about logo design. It could be church, school, could be whatever. Fun topic. I like playing with that stuff myself. Gail, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your insights, and I always have fun on this show. Sorry Sally couldn't join us, but we'll look forward to having her back. And again, Sally, if you're listening, prayers are with you and yours, and have a safe journey, and rejoice in the Lord, the risen Lord and Savior. Let's close the show, and we're right in the midst now, or just at the beginning of the Pentecost season, so I figured I would pick a Pentecost-focused song from the Branches Band. Holy Spirit is the name of the song from their album, Sing My Tongue. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Holy Spirit, dwell in me. Touch my eyes that I might see all your goodness, grace, and power. Stay beside me every hour. Be my drink, be my living bread. Keep me sheltered. Sweet contentment find. May I run this wicked race, filled by your amazing grace. Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit, comfort me. Holy Spirit, rescue me. Set my soul completely free. Beside Jordan, in God's bosom lay my head. Let me live in a brand new place. See my blessed Savior's face. Holy Spirit, rescue.